Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 561. And I'm joined today by Bobby Villain of Bob Villain, one of my most requested guests. I've had so many people request Bob over the years, Bobby. And yeah, I was so delighted to make it happen. I'd say in recent years, Bobby Villain and Ren are the two most requested guests. So I was delighted to get this chat and for it to go as beautifully as it did. Like, this was a joy. You will hear. I mean, we get onto some delicate subjects, but there's a friendliness and an openness and a warmth that allows us to get into all these things. So yeah, I think you're going to really enjoy this. We of course talk about like upcoming tours and festival shows. We talk about the new Bobby Villain album, Humble as the Sun, which is out on April 5th. We talk about the singles that have come out of that. We talk about everything. We talk about politics and life and everything that intersects in those realms. So you're going to love this. But we do also talk about independent music, independent record labels, independent artists. And this is an independent podcast. I was an independent musician, and you can support all of those things by heading over to speechdevelopmentrecords.com, where you can get merch, you can get my music, you can get my DVD, you can get all sorts of good stuff over there. So support, support, support. Another way to support is patreon.com/scroobiouspip. I got locked out of it for a bit, but I'm back in now, and you can support there for like $1 a month. Yeah, it's wonderful. Come and get involved in that. That helps pay me and all the people behind the scenes on the podcast. And twitch.tv/ScroobiousPipYo. Loads of good stuff going on over there. The community that we've built over there on the Twitch channel, in the chat, in the Discord, all of that is really, it gives me life. It's really, as some of you know, I've walked away a fair bit from pretty much all social media. That is kind of the remaining social media of choice. Streaming on Twitch and hopping in the Discord. So head over to twitch.tv/ScroobiousPipYo and get involved in all of that. Let's get on with this episode, shall we? As said, this was the first time we'd met. I was delighted to get to do it in person. We get into some, as said, some sensitive subjects, but I was really pleased to have these conversations. So yeah, I hope you enjoy episode 561 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Bobby Villain. Well, I'm here today with Bobby Villain of Bob Villain. How are you, man?
I'm good, thank you, bro. I'm good.
I'm excited to chat, man. I wanted to get, like, we've literally just met and I started recording immediately because you were talking about moving out of London to Margate, and I love Margate. I spent a load of time out there. My ex lived out there and we had our dog out there, so it's just such a beautiful place, isn't it, now? I think it's got a really good combination of feeling arty and modern, but still having a bit of an edge. Like, I hate places when, we're recording in East London and this got quite gentrified and quite, lost its edge a bit. And I like, it sounds weird to say, but the thing I like about Margate is I do still feel, you know, if I'm walking around at night, I've got to have my wits about me a bit. I'm used to places like that.
It's kind of odd like that because it's, especially like where I am, you can feel that edge there as well, which I like, which is one of the reasons why I was like, I'll be here.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think the thing you say about East London and it feeling very like gentrified and it losing that, I don't know, it's a double-sided sword, right? Like, obviously you want to feel safe wherever you are, but oftentimes like, you know, the people that have been living in a place for so long, they don't get to benefit from that new safety, the new coffee shops, the new, you know what I mean, retail, the new all of that stuff. And so that's one of the reasons why I had to move out of London, do you know what I mean? Because like, it just got to that point where I was like, I can't really justify what I'm spending up here, you know? And like, I don't know, I'm kind of baffled. I'm not sure who's going to be living in this city in another 5, maybe 10, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Years, I don't know who's going to be here.
And you've nailed it there, man. Like, it's all good to improve places, but you should be bringing people up rather than pushing people out. The people 100%. Who are there should be benefiting and accessing all of this rather than feeling, as you say, I can't live. Yeah. I've always lived out in Essex because anytime I've looked at moving into London, I'm like, I can't justify it.
Yeah, it's tricky. Cost and the... I grew up between Ipswich and East London, up the road from here. Yeah. And so... like, I'm lucky that I still have a base here.
Yeah.
But it is a shame to see the area change so much and the people that have been here for a long time just not really benefit from it, you know?
Yeah. Well, talk to me about growing up in Ipswich, because that's somewhere that has stayed quite the same for a long time. You got like the marina area kind of got a bit of a revitalization or whatever, but it's still, you know, it's very... I've dipped in and out of Ipswich for years, and it's one place that when I go back, it doesn't feel like that much has changed. Is that right or am I?
Nah, yeah. I went back. I hadn't been back for a long time, and then I went back last year around October time, and it had changed quite a lot from when I'd been there before, but not for the best.
Right.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Like, a lot of the shops are shut. Like, it's one of them places, like, where you know people talk about the high street is dying.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of those places where I'm like, the high street is dead.
Proper example of it,
like,
right.
It's dead. Like, it's just... And I've got tons of friends still there, and we talk on a regular basis, and like, but they will come up here and do, like, work and stuff, so I'll usually catch them here. Yeah. Like, there's not really a ton of reason for me to be back in Ipswich, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Unless maybe, like, a friend has a baby or something like that, where you go, but I don't really have much reason to go back there. But I went back and I caught up with some friends, you know, and it's just like, yeah, the whole area is dead. Like, it's just pound shops here and like, you know, this little knockoff shop here, but like, there's nothing there, you know? And like, I don't know, Ipswich is kind of a weird place. I'm always careful with how I talk about it because... it has a lot of great things in there, like especially in terms of like musically. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like talent there. There's a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it doesn't really have anywhere to go, or any like doesn't have any resources to help push it further.
Yeah.
But I'm always careful of how I talk about Ipswich because I do love the place, but it has a lot of problems there, particularly like it has a big heroin problem there in Ipswich.
Yeah.
And that when I went back there, it kind of like that was even more apparent. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And
it's kind of stuff in your like face. That thrive in those big small towns, if you know what I mean. They've not got the focus of a London or a Manchester, wherever it was, but they're still not a little village. Yeah. So it's still a city. It's still got all this, but it doesn't get the support and the funding and all the different things that you need. So what is there to do if all your venues are closing, if all your creative outlets are closing? Then people, like the small town I live in, has always had a big coke problem. Coke has never appealed to me. It's probably the drug I'm against the most, but it's like, I get it.
Yeah,
there's nothing to do and you're working your day job and you're getting to the weekend and you want to just let loose. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, that's it. And I think like with Ipswich, it is that thing of like, there's kind of less and less industry there. There's less and less like job opportunities. Like I have friends that, you know, that work there that like they find it hard. Do you know what I mean? Like to work in Ipswich and like if you don't have the qualifications or the experience to get a job that requires you to come to the big city and work in a nice office up here and you can do the commuting thing, there really isn't, there's not like a whole ton of options there, you know? Like here in London, like really, you know, there's retail out, just there's retail everywhere, right? There's tons of retail opportunities and like that's something that you can do like coming out of high school or whatever college, like you can do that at any time in your life, you could do a retail job. But in Ipswich, like, as I said, like the high street shutting and those kind of things, and then there not being like tons of office work, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a great deal for people to do. And then when people lose their jobs so they don't have work, they turn to other things, you know, and like times get hard and people start like looking to some people, obviously not everybody, but some people start looking to suppress some of the hurt and the pain that they're feeling from not being able to provide for themselves or their family, and they turn to substances in order to do that. And I think that's one thing that has happened a lot in that town, you know. I've seen it happen to friends of mine.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I've seen some friends be like very strong and like just continue and persevere, do you know what I mean? And they can't leave that place for certain reasons. Maybe they have family ties there or whatever, but, and also it's home, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that means a lot.
Yeah.
It can mean a lot to a lot of people.
Sure.
It always kind of blows my mind how we've fucked up society on so many levels, and it's at every hurdle. Things like going to everything being ordered online and importing from all over the world, that should have meant our port towns thrive, but it didn't, because the people with the money just built 4 or 5 megaports outside of any town, so no one's benefiting from that other than the companies. It should have meant, and again, like, I think about loads of things like this, where we worry about AI and automation. I wouldn't be bothered about that if it meant that we could all work less and have support and have a living wage. Because again, the fact should be, if we can get robots to do our jobs for us, then we should all be able to have more days off. We should be able to work a 3-day week and still earn a wage. But the way we've structured it, it's like, no, it means you're going to go, you're going to starve.
You're going to
go hungry. And it just blows my mind that there's, as I said, there's so many things like all of the port towns in the modern world you'd think would be thriving.
Yeah. For sure.
And they're not at all. They're all they've all lost all their industry. And
especially like some of Ipswich has Felixstowe right down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's right down the road. Like Lowestoft is not far. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like it's kind of crazy to be honest of like how a place can just die due to the greed of a few.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of start like we've jumped straight in. I kind of start every episode with saying how are you, kind of how are you, and asking how you are because I really want to kind of dig into that with you, because we're in a really weird time. Like it's historically art, music and stuff like that thrive in tough times. So as an artist and as a creator, it can be, you know, moments of great inspiration when the country's falling apart and things like that. But then when the inspiration has to come from fucking pain and struggle, whether it be your own or that of others, it's a really weird balance, because there's a responsibility to tap into that and report it and get that out there. And but then there's also, how much can you absorb?
Yeah.
You know, so how are you? How are you as a person?
As an individual, I'm okay. Yeah, I'm all right. Like, I've been very busy, but I feel like I've been busy for like years. And I'm constantly battling between the feeling of excitement of things that are coming and that I'm working on, and feeling tired as well, and kind of like worn out from all of the things, you know. But I feel good. I feel blessed. Every day I wake up, I feel lucky to be here, you know. Even though some days are harder than others, and like lots of personal things happen outside of the music that you know, you've got to kind of keep on top of, because whilst I'm trying to build something with, you know, with the band and the music and stuff, like I also want to make sure that I'm on top of my duties, you know, as a partner, as a father, as like, you know, as a friend, somebody that is just in this world and in this society, do you know what I mean? Want to make sure that I'm contributing something to it outside of the art that I'm making. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the business that I'm creating. So just lots of things to stay on top of, really. Yeah.
I want to kind of dig into to two things there. Because parenthood's a really interesting thing at a time like this, and as a creative, because I think, number one, it can put things in perspective, because no matter what's going on in the news, your kid might not, probably ain't going to care about that, and they're going to have other focuses and priorities, and they have to be the focus and priority. Yeah. You can't be like, no, I'm stressed over the Tories. Your kid ain't going to care about that. But number two, you know, also how daunting it can be when you can see the world going in a certain direction, like globally, see the world going in a certain direction, and aware that, you know, the stuff that you're talking about in your lyrics, the fight that you're fighting is for the future. As dramatic as that sounds, does that heighten things? So I guess, does parenthood heighten and focus that drive and motivation for change, or does it fit as a grounding distraction?
I don't know. It's tricky, really. Like, it definitely does heighten that focus for change, because it makes me want to like look at what my skill set is, like what am I good at, or what can I do, and then use that, whether you call it talent or ability or whatever you call it, use that for something positive and use it to for some sort of like positive change, even though it's on a very micro level. But I want to use that, right? So like, you know, I want to make songs that are socially conscious, politically conscious, and like they're maybe even talking about like, not just talking about the government and the economic crisis that we're going through, but also talking about like healthy eating, for example, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so that makes, yeah, like having, being a parent makes me want to do that, right? Because yeah. I will want to try and play a small part in making this world what I think would be better. But because the ability or the talent or whatever you call it that I have, it needs me to be in the studio. It needs mm-hmm. me to be writing and recording. It needs me to be on the road, you know, playing shows. And because we're an independent band, I'm an independent artist, it also means that I have to be on the emails, making sure the vinyls are getting, ordered to the correct quantity and everything's getting to the fulfillment center, and I'm on the ball with everything, you know, I've got to make sure I'm on the ball with everything. And so that then takes away, I suppose, from certain, quality time mm-hmm. that I'll be able to have, you know. But then what I've learned over time is like finding ways to kind of bring the two together mm-hmm. and stress the importance to my daughter of, you know, like what it is that her dad is doing, and give her a first person view into the world that I'm in, you know, through my work and stuff. So, you know, she'll come with me to some shows, and she'll see like everybody running around, and she'll see us like setting up and doing sound check, and you know, she like might join me on stage like she did last year, like the end of last year, she joined me on stage and we did like a, you know, a little run through, and she might come to the studio with me. She might, you know, like just yesterday I was playing her the new album, you know, when we was on the train, she was like, oh, I really like this song, I like that song because of this thing. So it's like bringing her into it so that I can get that quality time, but I can still continue with the thing that I feel I have to continue with, you know, and that's the artistry. So bringing them two together, and hopefully as well, it will help her realize her dreams, what she wants to do, and hopefully give her a framework by which to operate in and create something for herself.
Yeah,
and feel like, you know, there, if you have a talent, if you have something that you're doing and you're recognized for, that you should use it for good and don't just use it for selfish gain, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful balance. Also, you know, a constant learning curve of finding what's going to work and what's not. But things like that, particularly like, I know that growing up where I grew up in Essex, it was very working class, very standard school and whatever. And there was no hint of that kind of life.
Yeah.
No indication of you can do these things. Yeah. So to have that exposure, whether your daughter goes in that direction or not, to have that option, I truly believe that now with, like, I had a period of being quite anti-religion, but I truly believe that with all things now is everyone should have the choice of everything. You should hear about this religion and that religion and that religion, as long as it's not being forced upon you.
Yeah.
And same with careers and vocations and that. It's like, you might not want to be anywhere near the arts. You might go, I've seen what dad does. I ain't into that.
She's like, she doesn't really have much interest in making music.
Yeah.
She's like a fan of some bands and stuff, you know, but I think for her, she's like, well, that's dad's job.
Yeah.
And you know, she wants to do her own thing. She wants to be an independent woman. She wants to like think for herself, and you know, and she's very opinionated, and I encourage that. And like, you know, she has things that she wants to do, things that she's not interested in. And I'm like, I just want to help facilitate all of those things the best of my ability. Like, I didn't know anybody that was self-employed, legally self-employed, until I can't even remember how, like, I didn't know you could work for yourself. Growing up, I didn't know you could, like, all throughout my teens, like, even, like 21, 22, 23, 20, like, I didn't know that you could, like, it sounds insane to even think, like, to say, but I didn't know that you could work for yourself. Whenever someone I freelance, I just thought, oh, so, like, you've got money from somewhere else, because, like, you can't actually, you can't make a living doing that. That's not a real thing. Like, you have to have a boss. Like, you have to have somebody telling, you know? And I was always of the thing of, like, I don't want that. I want to be able to wake up when I want to wake up, do the work that I want to do. And I was always trying to find a way to do that. But I never knew anybody that was self-employed. I didn't know anybody that worked for themselves. I didn't know anybody that did that. I didn't know it was an option. I didn't know it was a real thing. And so for me, like showing my daughter that like, you can do it. It takes a lot of work and it's this terrifying thing. But if you want to do it, then you can do it. Like those sorts of things, just want to give her a view into life that I didn't have or that I found much later on. Give it to her earlier so she has more options at her disposal from an earlier date.
Yeah. You know? And showing the validity of it.
Yeah.
Like for a long time, I would think if I'm self-employed, it's because I've just not really got a job and I'm kind of hustling and doing bits. It's like, no, this is as valid as any job. Yeah. It's like, it still works. I do want to talk about the new record. I want to talk about being independent. But just before we move on from that, what music is your daughter into? And are there any bands that you're like annoyed that she's into or something you're like, yeah, I'm pleased you're feeling this?
I like that she just listens to music.
Yeah.
Right? But she loves Panic Shack. She loves this band Panic Shack. Do you know them?
Not familiar with them.
So they're like, they're an all-female band. We brought them on tour with us, the last tour, because I love them as a band. Like, we as a band love them.
Yeah.
And we'd met them and we'd done a couple of shows with them previously. And one day I was listening to Radio 6 because I was listening for myself on the radio.
Because
I was like quite excited that we're going to be on the radio.
Right.
And then and Panic Shack came on. I was like, oh, they play Panic Shack on it. And the song came on. And by like the second chorus, my daughter was singing along to it. She's like, I really like this. So what is this? And so I found it on Spotify. Like I said, oh, it's this band. I know them. And we listened to it. And she just took it and ran with it.
Yeah.
And so like that is one band that she absolutely loves. And so when it came time to tour, I thought, oh, yeah, we'll make sure that, you know, we bring them on tour. And so I was telling my daughter, like, yeah, you know, they're coming on tour. And like, you could meet them. You could watch them. You come to the shows and da-da. And she was so excited. And she's like, I want to interview them. I have so many questions I want to ask them. So I was like, all right, cool. And then so she, along with my partner helped her come up with a bunch of questions and like researched the band. And then my daughter, she sat in their dressing room and she asked them these questions. She interviewed them. And it was like I know it's my daughter, but I'm like, it was so incredible to watch her interview them. Like it was
how
a proper
old is
interview. She's about to be 11.
Oh, yeah.
So it was so incredible to watch her interview them. And so I had like Rhiannon, who shoots our social media stuff. She was filming the whole thing. She cut together at the interview for her. Esme, who does our like photography, she was like taking photos of it. And also she has this memory to hold on to. And it's like, it's documented of her asking her favorite band these questions. But like Panic Shack is the band that she plays all the time. And it's like, it's loud punk music and like female band, and so I just think like this band is made for this kid. Like my music is, I'm a father, but it's not really made for her. But this band is for her, you know. And I love that she listens to those. But aside from that, she like, you know, she'll listen to like some like a Harry Styles song or whatever, like that sort of stuff. But Olivia Rodrigo, she listens to that sort of stuff. But She loves Panic Shack.
That's a good mix. I mean, we're recording this in the Acos studios, but we need to get your daughter a podcast, man.
Yeah.
Youngest interviewer. That would be a hit. Just
me.
An 11-year-old interviewing like all these dope bands. That'd be great. I always remember the first time my goddaughter asked us to put on Billy Bragg in the car.
Right,
and Billy was someone like was one of the first people I supported because our music was political and made statements and that. And yeah, the fact that she was like, I want to hear that Billy Bragg guy. It's like, that's, you got to love that. And it taps into kind of something you mentioned about the importance of social commentary and stuff in music. Cause I struggle with it at points. Cause I know when I started writing, I was like, we're going to fucking change the world. And then the world didn't change, but we made some cool songs and it felt hard. And it was chatting to Billy Bragg that made me realise that you might not change the world, but you can change the individual worlds.
Yeah.
And it was Billy watching Joe Strummer talk at a march once that made Billy start doing what he does.
Yeah.
And then he's changed so many things. And then it was probably hearing someone with the same accent as me in Billy Bragg that made me kind of go, oh, I can speak about these things and talk, and these things can spread and change. So I guess, what do you feel is the responsibility of of the artist, and yeah, well, where do you feel political music sits and socially conscious music sits? What's its role?
I do think that, like, you have to have that belief that I'm going to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, it's like that thing of, you know, that cliche of shoot for the moon, if you miss, you land the stars. Like, yeah, I feel like, you know, it's similar. It's like, change, the, like, you know, you set out to change the world.
Yeah.
But, like, if you fail, then at least you change, like you're saying, like the individuals.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, the amount of people that have come up to us at the shows and the festivals, and even like if it's out on the street sometimes, right? Oh, your music helped me through a hard time, whatever. And I don't think of our music as being the type of music that would help somebody through a hard time. Like, I don't, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't yeah, think of it like sure. that. But it does, apparently, you know? And people talk to me quite often about how they've changed their diet and gotten into in the gym, and they've gotten into like sports and like tried to be live a healthier lifestyle because of certain songs on the previous album influencing them, you know? And so I think, like, I'm happy with that, you know? Like, the world is far too big of a thing to change. And actually, like, who am I to change it? You know, it's like, if I change the world in my image, it's not going to be right for somebody else.
Yeah, but
for the individual who it is right for, they will find the music, they will find the band, and they will take what they need from it and take what they want from it. And I think that's really all we should be trying to, you know, that's what we should be trying to do is a band that is politically conscious and socially conscious and all of those things. Like, I think we should be aiming to try and give people something that those people need. It's not going to be for everybody, but we have to be happy and content with the positive change that we are making in people's lives. You know, whether that's a handful of people or it's thousands or it's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, you know, like, we know that what we're doing is true to ourselves and other people find it, and it's true to them as well, you know?
Yeah. And I love that. It's one of the things I love about what you guys did on the last record and what I've heard of the new record, Humble as the Sun, out April 5th. And the new single, Hunger Games, is out now, and it's a prime example of, like, a lot of bands might have, like, their one kind of serious song on the record, or their heavy song, or their political song, or whatever else. And then, you know, that might not really be played at the live gigs because it's more a sit at home and take it in deeply. You write bangers that have got a statement, and you write stuff that people are going to be, you know, and I love the idea of channeling the energy of music and the energy of a mosh pit or just being excited at a gig, and channeling the fucking energy of being angry at the government or the way society is at the moment. So is that kind of a conscious choice to go, I want to talk about these things, but I also don't want people to just feel as if they're coming to a lecture or coming to, you know, something else? It should be a party, but a party that makes you think and maybe go out and make some change. I was going to say something more, smash some windows or something more provocative there, but I'm not going to put those words
again,
in your mouth.
I think, like, what people, you know, what people take from it is for them, right? Like, once the song is finished and it's out there for people to consume and people to listen to, the intention behind the song is no longer, it's not with me anymore, you know? So it's something that I kind of throw my hands up at and just like, I did, you know, I said what I said on there and I did what I did. There's no, you know, malicious intent behind any of the music. And so, you know, I don't think that people will see any malice in it. And I just always hope that people see what I intended to do or whatever they get from it is positive. But in terms of it being like, yeah, we don't make the one song. We have a whole album right? But that's just because that's just how we feel at that moment. Do you know what I mean? And lyrically, that's what I'm thinking and that's what I'm feeling. Maybe there will be a point, I'm sure there will be a point where the message is delivered in a different way, or maybe it's a different message that's being delivered, you know? I think with the new album, the message has become a little more hopeful. Mm-hmm. And this album, I do think it's something where I'm like, it helps me through a hard time. There's songs on this album that I put on when I'm having bad days, like bad days, and I like really need to pick myself up. There's songs that I put on from this new album that I just listen to, and I have to remind myself of who I am and where I've come from and what I've been able to accomplish and what I've been able to do and what I have yet to do. And so that message, I want it to be something that people can hold on to. I don't want them to feel like it's a lecture. I don't want them to feel like they're just being talked at, you know, like they're in a classroom. I want them to feel like, yeah, it's a party, but it's a party with a message. And when you're in that room or you're at that festival, I want people to feel like they're part of something. And we are, you know, like we're a community of like-minded people on, like, not on, maybe not on every issue, every topic, but on some of these issues, some of these topics, we're a room of like-minded people and recognize that we as individuals have the power to change our lives and the lives of others around us. But also as a collective, look at how strong we are. Mm-hmm. You know, like look at this room full of people and look at what we're able to do if we all get together on a unified cause. And we see that all the time with, like, you know, with, like a protest is the best example of that. Do you know what I mean? Like a march through the street is the best example of that. So yeah, I want people to feel like they're part of the thing that I'm talking about, you know?
And is that why, I mean, I assume live shows are really important to you because you guys are known for your live shows and known for having that energy and that excitement. But I think there's something about being in a room with a load of other people and hearing something and feeling something that these messages and meanings and statements can get, they root a lot deeper than maybe if you hear it, particularly in the modern age where music is so disposable and you can just listen to any song in the world at any point. Is that key to you, to get in rooms with people and have that shared experience?
Yeah, because I learned very early on that, like, our music is best translated live.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing, whatever that thing is, where people see it and like they go, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
That happens live.
Yeah.
More so than it happens on the record. I think people still get it on the record and whatnot, you know, and you hear the record and people think, oh, this is cool. I'd like to see it live.
Yeah.
And then when they come and see it, they go, okay, I get it. Because the record is just the record, but live, the show is so different, you know, because, yeah, the songs, we're playing the songs, but we're not a band that just like, here's the set and we're just going to play it at you.
Yeah.
I always joke on stage that like a Bob Villain show is equal parts music and equal parts talking. And so in between the songs, there's, you know, there's chatter and there's talk and there's like, you know, it's done in a lighthearted kind of way because we're discussing heavy topics, you know? And we don't want people to leave feeling like they have like this weight on them, you know? We want them to know that like, if things are rough, they are hard.
Yeah.
They're harder for some than they are for others. And like, but it doesn't mean that we can't like look at the positives in life. It doesn't mean that we can't have fun and we can't have a joke. Do you know what I mean? We can't have a laugh
and
about
it. And it's the spoonful of sugar thing.
Exactly.
Right. You can have some lightness in between that will make it easy. But also, I always found, like, I literally ended up, when I did an Edinburgh Fringe run, it was all spoken word because I knew so much of the actual content was fucking heavy.
Yeah.
I'd write actual jokes to go in between, partly for the spoonful of sugar thing, but partly because I think it means things impact more.
Yeah.
If you get in that kind of more light place and then you're like, oh, and by the way, here's what we're saying, then it can really hit you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, 100%.
So those things can be crafted beautifully for impact as well as for levity.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And so that's what we try to do because I think it was that realization over time of doing these live shows that a spoonful of sugar will help the medicine go down, you know, and as well, like, that's just kind of like who we are. We discuss these topics and we discuss these issues. And I think people with certain bands or certain, you know, people that they, you know, their art discusses these things, think that we walk around all day with that. That's not the case, you know, like there's a time and a place for everything. And like, actually most of the time it's kind of in good spirits and just trying to be happy and trying to have fun.
It's one of the reasons I started a podcast was because of the topics I talked about musically in my times in music, people assumed I was far more highbrow or just a different dude. And I always remember when me, Kay Tempest and Polar Bear all did this tour together and we'd be in the van just bopping to 90s R&B and just decking about. And I remember looking around thinking, this isn't what anyone who's coming to these shows is going to think we're going to be doing. In our, like, we're just having a laugh and enjoy ourselves. But when we're up there, it's all this,
it's very
this big, heavy stuff. It's like, no, that ain't, you can't, live constantly like that. It wouldn't be.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you've gotten it many a time where people are like, maybe, oh, you're not as serious as I thought you were going to be, or you're not as this as I thought you were going to be, or you're not as some, like, especially early on in the band, we used to get, oh, you guys are a lot friendlier than what I thought you'd just.
Yeah.
Why would we not be friendly?
Why would we not be friendly?
Be friendly?
But you're meant to be angry.
Yeah, you know, that's
we're
it.
I'm angry at you, man.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not angry at you. You know?
I wouldn't be as friendly if Rishi was here or whoever else, but you're not them.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to, again, there's so much we can talk about, but I'm aware of limitations of time and the people absorbing things well. But one thing I want to talk about, because Hunger Games struck me on this subject, and I can't remember if it was from the song or from a lyric, an interview I saw at one point, but I kind of just want to talk about the damage. I think I'm rambling and I can't get my point together here, but I think one of the most damaging things of recent political times is phrases, things being packaged into a phrase, like cost of living crisis sounds quite nice and quite comfortable. Yeah. The easiest example is Brexit. I genuinely think the journalist who accidentally coined the phrase Brexit caused a massive snowball effect, because Brexit didn't have a defined meaning. Yeah. So it meant millions of people could vote for it on their own meaning.
Yeah.
And you're not actually voting for anything that's real and substantial. You're voting for what you want that to mean. I want to vote trampoline.
Yeah.
And to me, trampoline means this. And things like that. How do you feel about that? Like, because as someone who has to write lyrics and has to get these points into 2-minute songs, 3-minute songs, 4-minute songs, or whatever else, has to use language and phrases so they hit through. Again, on the counter side, I'd say things like, I did a whole podcast on Deef Fund the Police, because I think it's an amazing topic that maybe switches a lot of people off because of the simple title of it, and it goes far deeper than that, and it's far more complex. So how do you feel about all of that? Finding the right phrases, and then when the right phrases are used to lighten things. As I said, it's easier to talk about the cost of living crisis than people literally starving in the streets and not being able to feed their kids and having to choose between food or electricity.
Yeah.
The cost of living crisis, it packages it up nicely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, when I'm writing the lyrics, I'm really writing them for myself in any way. So, like, I'm like, I understand it.
Yeah.
Like, I know what I mean by it. It's like, and I'm writing it. Like, I told you, like, when I'm having those hard days, I put on certain songs on the album. Yeah. It's for me. Like, I'm not making it for anybody else, it's for me. The fact that other people take something from it is a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bonus that, like, has allowed me to travel and play these things live and da, da, da. But, like, I would still be doing this if nobody listened because it's for me. And so, in terms of, like, thinking about the phrases and how to word things, I don't do that a whole lot. Like, I kind of trust myself that, you know, like, again, I said there's no, like, malicious intent behind creating any of this music. And so I know if there's never any malice behind it, then I just trust the process of me writing it. And if there is something that somebody is, you know, they don't understand, or I'm maybe like, I don't know, I switch a voice and how I'm communicating something in this verse is different to that verse. Like, I just kind of trust that people will understand it. And if not, then they'll see me and we can talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
We'll just
come to the show and say, you say this thing. Like, and I get that a lot, you know? And some people, they don't understand. But there's also that when I'm writing it, I'm like, well, this, again, it's for me. I understand it. It's not for everybody. Like, if I say, like you're saying, defund the police, right? We say, if I say defund the police, if I say abolish the police, some people are not going to understand that. They just don't get it.
Yeah.
Oh, but I've got friends that are police officers, or I've got da-da-da-da, what would they do? I think, well, possibly you're coming from a completely different world that I'm coming from, and maybe even like, you haven't done, like, you're talking about it from a very personal point of view. Like, maybe you just haven't done the reading for it
to see that,
like, we could, I'm just using that because you mentioned that, like, defund the police. Like, we could defund the police and still have a society that is, like, not murdering and raping and robbing
and
thieving and stuff like
that. It's not defund the police and burn the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's invest that money in society and culture.
Exactly.
In community.
Yes, exactly. You know, and so it's like, I know that is a possibility, right? Like, I feel like if we as a society decided to implement that change,
yeah,
we could do it in a way that you would not see murder rates increase, you would not see rape races increase, you would not see hate crimes increase, you would not see thieving and burglary increase, like you wouldn't see that. But some people, they look at things in such a personal way, it's like, it's not a personal change.
Yeah.
It's a national, it's a global change. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And you can tell when people haven't done the reading, because again, the argument will be, well, you'll feel differently when you need to phone them after you've been burgled. And I'll say, I'd rather have not been burgled.
There you go.
I'm not about ringing them to come and deal with it. So I'd rather we'd stop the burglary rather than the person we phone after. Because again, most crimes, the police are contacted after they've happened rather than preventing. And that's what, again, this is turning into the, go and listen to the Defund the Police episode. It's fantastic. I speak to some great experts on the subject. But yeah, it's all of those arguments can be so quick because all they've heard is a phrase rather than...
Exactly. Yeah. But then, so, you know, like if in a song I say like, I don't need the police. I've never needed the police. When I've needed them, they haven't been able to help me anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think, well, they're not serving me and they're not serving so many of my community and they're not serving so many of other communities. Like you say, majority of the time, police are called after the crime. Mm. Like we've seen so many stories. We've seen like stories about victims of rape, right? And that the London Met, there's a fridge full of samples so full that they can't even close it, right? And these are all like from victims, right, of sexual assault or rape. And we're seeing that how many of those trials when somebody has been raped or sexually assaulted, how many of them end up in a conviction? And how many of them end up in a conviction that ensures this person will not do this again? Right. And like we see that instantly, that's failing women predominantly. Right. That's failing women. Me as a black man, I've personally seen the police fail my community. So if I speak, we don't, like, I don't need them. They've never served me or my community anyway. Yeah. And actually, they've never served that community. They don't serve that community. They serve themselves. So if I then say that in a song, I just say it the way that I know how to say it.
Yeah.
And I don't think about packaging it for somebody else's ears.
Yeah.
Because then I'm not creating it for myself. I'm creating it with somebody else in mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I just feel like I have to feel comfortable and confident that I'm going to say this thing. I mean it with no ill towards people.
Yeah.
And hopefully they understand it.
Yeah.
And if not, then maybe it's just not for them.
I feel you. I feel you. You mentioned about making things for you in the corner of the room. Then my record label, our slogan is, we may not be for you and that's fine.
Yeah.
All of our merch now, it's just stuff I want to wear.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've not got any like 5-panel hats. I'll release a 5-panel hat because I want to, because I just want it. It's like, there you go.
That's literally the same thing. Like, we don't have any hats because I can't wear any hats.
Yeah,
exactly. So we were like, you need to do some caps or you need to do some woolly hats. I can't fit one of them on my head. Like, I'm not making that. And it's the same with the music, you know? I'm just making what I want to hear.
I love it. Well, I mean, I want to kind of, we've got about 15 minutes or so left. And before we get to the end, I want to talk about being an independent artist. But before we move on from politicism, and I've left this till late in because I don't want it to seem like it's trying to get any scandal or headlines, but I want to talk a little bit about, because I've had Sleaford Mods on the podcast and I rate them as people.
Mm-hmm.
When the thing happened at their gig with the Palestinian flag, I saw your post about it and I agreed. Mm. I saw other people's posts about it. But it instantly hit me as, is it a problem on the left that we police ourselves too much and end up weakening ourselves rather than, you know, fighting those on the other side? Because again, I think, again, to be clear, I thought they handled that shit. I didn't think the explanation was great, but having known the lads for a while, I do think they're genuine lads. I do think they're genuinely political. I support not wanting to comment on a subject until you've done the research, but I also think, I did a post, not directly influenced by that, but kind of on that line, saying with Palestine, like, there is a lot that's complicated if you look at the history, but there's a lot that's not complicated. There's kids being killed. It's not complicated. There's even outside of it, there's a massive rise in anti-Muslim, in Islamophobia and in anti-Semitism. Yeah. And these things aren't complicated. They're fucking wrong. All the killing, all the disproportionate reaction, There's a lot that's not complicated. Yeah. So I guess kind of, how do you feel on that? Like musicians' right to, or duty to speak on things, and then how we police each other, I guess.
It's tricky. That is tricky because the musicians, you said musicians' right to speak up, right?
Or like duty, I guess.
Yeah, duty, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Sorry. So musicians' duty to speak up. So I have always kind of maintained that I don't necessarily think as a musician, you have to speak up, right? Like if some atrocity has happened in the world, yeah. I don't know that you have to have an opinion on that. I don't know if you have an opinion, you must speak up.
And there's, I think it's worth, again, it's like you were saying earlier about how you don't know other people's life or situation. Yeah. Like I know my priority when all this kind of started this time round. And again, I had Loki on 4 or 5 years ago to talk about this. So, but this time around in this current iteration, my priority was checking in on my Muslim mates, on my Palestinian mates, on my Jewish mates, rather than what people are going to think of me because I've not made a statement on social media yet, kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, I get that.
But I don't know that you have a duty to do it, right? Because I don't think anybody, there may be a duty to your fan base. That might be one thing. But then is there a duty to the world as a whole? Like, it's when that happened, when some things happen, I'm not thinking like, what does this artist think about this? Like, I don't
I need
care.
To find out what The Rock thinks.
But yeah, it's like, exactly. Because it's like, so like Dave Chappelle talking about, like, where's Ja Rule? When like when the Iraq War was happening. Yeah. It's like, I don't care for his opinion. I don't care for his opinion on that. Like, but if you make a living, I suppose, if you make a living masquerading as somebody that cares about the rights of oppressed people, then yeah, maybe you do have a duty to speak up. Maybe you do have a duty.
Or maybe even just a duty to do your due diligence, to do the research.
Exactly. Because, but that's the thing, right? Like, I think...
And again, I want to be clear, this isn't trying to be any kind of any drama or anything. No, absolutely. I remember seeing it thinking, oh, fuck, I rate the people who are speaking against them. I rate the people that they are. So it was a weird
situation. I'll be clear, like, I like some of their music.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I like some of their music. That's how I'm aware of the band in the first place to go, yo, use lot. Like, I didn't find the mods from that thing of like where a lot of people may have, a lot of people that are targeting them may have found, they don't know this band from nowhere, but I knew the band years before.
Yeah.
And you know, they're quite vocal towards other bands about certain things, right? Yeah, like they've spoken up about people appropriating a working class voice or this, that and the third, right? Like they're not shy to let their opinion be heard. I suppose it just comes across is quite cowardly to make a living and sell records off of you caring for the oppressed people. But then when something so clearly is happening and we're all watching it, everybody's watching it, you don't say anything. And actually what you do say and what you do is not the best reaction. Do you know what I mean? And I know it's like it gets long when people start throwing things on stage.
Yeah.
This is my CD. This is my whatever. Do you know what I mean? People throw shirts.
Well, it's become a new trend of throwing random shit now, isn't it?
On stage. Yeah. Wear this hat. Do you know what I mean? Like it's annoying. It does get annoying. But like, I don't know. You have to have enough decorum, let's say, that like when somebody throws something like that, that's so like has a political attachment to it, you should probably deal with that quite carefully. Maybe it is just that they didn't deal with it in a careful, in a delicate manner, right?
I'd agree with that.
And that then calls into question other things. But in terms of a duty, I don't know. Like, you know, I've seen other bands not speak about certain things, but they got an album to sell. And I think, okay, well, you might just not want to like mess up your money. Do you know what I mean? Or maybe you've got people on your team that might be upset if you say something. And so... like, you don't want to mess that up. Like, I can understand that, but I can't agree with it, right?
Yeah.
And so an artist's duty, I think, is probably dependent on what that artist has been come to be known
who
for.
They presented themselves as. Yeah.
And actually, if you're not that thing, you might want to rebrand yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or if when something happens and who you have presented yourself to be is called into question, what kind of answer can you give? Because that's kind of what we saw with that instance of like, something was thrown on stage. There's a political attachment to that thing that's thrown on stage. It's not just a random hat. It's not just whatever. There's a political attachment to that thing that's thrown on stage. And your response has called into question how you've presented yourself. And then how you've responded to that response
has kind of further
deepened the hole.
Yeah.
And for me, that was enough like that. But also the fact that like I'm close. Like I have a personal attachment to what is happening over there, right?
Yeah,
to those
yeah.
people. And so it's not just the flavor of the month for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same way when George Floyd was murdered, that weren't the flavor of the month for me. And there were a lot of bands that used that as an opportunity to say, hey, like, look at what I'm doing this month to raise money for Black Lives Matter or da 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 da. And then like what? Then all what? Like years later, don't give a fuck about it. Back to, sorry, I don't know if I can swear, but
yeah, you
don't care about it. Like you don't hear a peep from them on anything. You know what I mean? Like when Chris Cabal was murdered by police here, you don't hear nothing from them, from these bands. And that's what I'm saying. Like I have personal attachments to some of these issues that I'm speaking on. And that's why maybe my reaction was the way that my reaction was on that day, because I'm watching these videos and I'm seeing people that I have an attachment to being murdered and children being murdered. And like now it's at such a point that the whole world is seeing the atrocities that has happened to these people. And actually that whole thing of, do you condemn this terrorist group and do you condemn this terrorist group? All that is kind of gone out of the window because we've gone, yeah, the response is disproportionate, heavily disproportionate.
Yeah.
And this is something that we as a society cannot allow to happen.
Yeah.
And look back at people that now are speaking up. What did they say then? Were they neutral? Were they, oh, well, we've got to hear both sides? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No. Like, some people knew what was happening. I knew what was happening. This, again, the same way of like...
Again, it's the thing that it's not... It didn't start on October 7th is what people are seemingly unaware of.
Exactly. Like that was a pro-Palestine march. It was the first march I went on as a child.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is something, again, that I've been aware of. Same with the police brutality and the disproportionate policing of Black community and the heavy-handedness by which we're police. Like, this is something that like I've been aware of, you know, from personal experience and through education, through reading and through doing my due diligence on these topics. And I don't know, to sit and say like, well, I don't have the information. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
So, well, you haven't really got that. You like that excuse is not really valid in this day and age.
Yeah.
Especially months on.
Yeah, the information is there.
It's there. It's just like whether or not you care to do the reading for it. But I don't know. Do you have a duty? Maybe. If they don't want to speak up, then it's not for them to speak up. But like, me being who I am,
yeah,
I know, I might poke at you
yeah.
if you don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's just what it is, because I'm speaking from a personal thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to speak up, but I might poke you for it. And if I poke you for it, you don't have to be bothered by it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But some of them aren't, and some of them are.
Yeah.
And so if they are, let them. But the thing about the left, I know I'm going on, but like the thing about the left fighting among themselves, yeah, I do hear that. And sometimes the family laundry is best done in the house, right? And so maybe we should have those conversations amongst ourselves. But actually, like what you find is that so many of these bands are like they're behind a wall. They're behind. You can't have these conversations, right?
Yeah.
Like there's bands that like. Some of these bands you don't even see at the festivals that you're playing with them.
Mm.
They're not accessible. They don't make themselves accessible.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's fine, because I understand like maybe you're going to get bothered or maybe da 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 da. And like you might not want to have these conversations, but like, well then where is it left to air it out?
Yeah.
This platform that's made it possible, I suppose.
Yeah,
do you know
what
I mean? And people do that with us.
Yeah.
Oh, you da 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 da. But the thing is, you know, like, I'll stand on my word.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Again, having been, like, when I came up with music, was just as social media was coming about. Mm. So having been there through all of that, you know damn well that the ones that you know you've been true to yourself on, people can say what they want and it doesn't hurt. It's the ones where you've maybe compromised something and they're having a dig at something that's going to make you go, ah, fuck. Exactly. You know that's on you. That's not on them. That's on you, kind of like, nah, fuck you.
And that's it. And so if I say something about the Mods or Idols or any of these other bands, if they know, like, oh, well, I've been true to myself, they probably wouldn't let it get to them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But if you're thinking, yeah, shit, you might have a point. Well, actually, I don't think he should have said that about me because I say, okay, cool. Well, like, you're angry, bro. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to be if you feel like you've been true to yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Just tell me to shut up and go away.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. Before we wrap things up, I want to talk, because we were talking, or what you were saying there made me think about how we've maybe all, as a species, got a real problem with connecting to things deeply that we don't have a personal experience of. So like a George Floyd thing will happen, we'll all jump on that, but then it's not a deep connection. And it made me think that when I hear your music, like or culturally and sonically, you've got British punk influence and Jamaican influence, right? And when most British people think back to the music of the 70s, you've got punk and reggae are big things there. Punk is remembered as being very political. Reggae, most British people think of just being this cool, chill vibe when it was the most political music. It's just, it was talking about political situations that we weren't educated on or didn't know about. So you don't think of it. You think of Bob Marley as One Love. You don't think of Small Axe and everything else that's so politically charged. Even One Love, it's all so politically charged. So, yeah, do you think that's kind of an issue with us as humans, that unless we have a direct relation to it or interaction, then we just, you know, we kind of, we might jump on it for that social media cycle, but then after that it's
I suppose any personal connection with something that is, you know, that is happening in the world, like, you're going to feel more, you're going to feel stronger on it or more passionately on it than other people or some other people, I suppose, right? But then I don't know, because I also see, like, a lot of white non-Muslim activists that have been campaigning, like, for the freedom of Palestine for years. Do you get me? Like, they got turned onto it at university and did not stop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, ain't got nothing to do with, there's nothing to do in their instance of, like, them because they're Muslim or because they're Palestinian or because they're brown. Do you know what I mean? It's like, they just saw this thing and was like, nah, that's wrong. You know? Like, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that you have to have a personal connection or attachment to it. It does further, like, it does help strengthen, I suppose, how you feel about this thing. But I don't know. Like, I'm not an animal, but I'm not a pig, but I don't want to see pigs get killed. I'm not a cow. I don't want to see cows get killed. I have compassion.
Yeah.
I don't have to be the same species. I don't have to have a personal attachment. Do you get me? Yeah. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to cut that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to eat that. I'm not going to contribute to that industry. Well, do you know what I mean? I don't move. Yeah. I don't oink. I'm just like, do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. Do you have to have a personal attachment? No, you just kind of have to be, in some of these instances, you just kind of have to be a compassionate human being.
Yeah.
But I do think, though, that the lack of time, the lack of free time that people have, heavily dictates what they dedicate the small time that they have to care about, right?
Yeah.
So if you work all day, every day, and, like, you don't really have much time for yourself, do you feel like going to the protest on Saturday? Do you feel like doing all the reading about this issue or that issue? Like, do you feel like being vocal and speaking up and making that, like, a part of your life? Because it takes time.
Yeah.
And we see that so often with activists getting burnt out, right? Because they're just like, they're so heavily on the cause and they're not taking time for themselves. So it does take a lot of time and effort from people. And I think that is probably, like, the number one reason why people may not dedicate time to being vocal on a cause or, you know, taking that up as part of their life, because it just is time consuming. And, like, it can take a lot out of you. So it's easier to just post a black square, make a little donation and go, all right, next. Do Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I did my thing, cool. And like, fine, fair enough. Maybe you did do your thing and maybe that's like all you have to give and that's okay as well, you know?
Better than nothing doesn't have to be a lot better than nothing. It's better than nothing, but it's only a little bit better than nothing.
But also...
Be aware how much better than nothing.
Maybe it's what you have.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't think we could be angry at people for giving what they have.
Yeah, you know?
If you don't have the time,
yeah,
you don't have the money, you can't do it, then I suppose... Who can fault you? You know, who can blame you? But I don't know. Some of those bands, it's like, bro, you've made a mint off of being this thing. You know. And I think for me, some of them bands, it was like this was the second or third time round.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Where I'm like, wow, you didn't say nothing about this other thing that was in like that was global news.
Yeah.
Ah, but you had an album to promote then as well.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah. It's harder to let that slide.
Yeah, that's fair. We used to do quote videos for each episode of this podcast and we stopped because I kind of feel the point of these conversations is context. Like the whole thing is context. So taking things out of context. But if we were still doing them, we would definitely just do I don't moo, I don't oink, Bobby Villain, as the takeaway. Here's the quote. Here's the basis of what we talked about.
I'd pick that.
So, I mean, to wrap things up, I said the new album comes out on April 5th. What's ahead? Are you hitting the road with it? What's the deal? And how does that sit? As a parent, how do you find all that balance? Is it small bursts? Is it long tours? Is it shows here and here? I know you'll be doing a load of, again, we've not talked much about independent, but I think one of the most important things for artists who care about their fan base and getting things out of it is independent record stores. And I know you'll be doing Banquet and Rough Trade and all of these. I no doubt, like we used to do Spillers in Cardiff was always a favourite because all these independent stores are the ones that do say to people coming in, have you heard this?
You should
check this out and get things out there in a way that isn't an algorithm, that isn't a, if you like this, you might like this. It's doing that, but in a human way. So what's the plan for the times ahead?
So we're doing some in-stores, out-stores with the new album, you know, on release week. So like from April 5th, like we are, like on the day, we have two shows in Kingston for Banquet.
And we
have one at Prism.
Yeah.
And then we're going across the road to Fighting Cocks and doing a smaller one.
I love what Banquet do, man. They'll do multiple things. They'll do an in-store, they'll do the club night, they'll do all sorts.
It's
legends, man.
It's an important store as well. Do you know what I mean? Banquet, it's an important store. And so on the last album, we didn't get to kind of do any collaborative thing with them. So on this album, it was important to make sure that we did.
A buddy piece who mixes and masters this podcast used to work in Banquet.
Right.
So many creative people that are... making an impact. I've got ties to Banquet. It's legendary.
It's a great shop, man. So, and then we're doing like Rough Trade stuff as well throughout that release week. But then, you know, we're doing the festivals and you ask about the balancing it with the family life and stuff. So, you know, May, we did have like a bigger overseas tour planned, but we've kind of moved that to the end of the year that I can have some time with family and stuff. And so that's really what it is. And then like finding like instances where I can have family with me, you know? And so the festivals, some of those festivals, they're cool, you know, that you take kiddo to or whatever. We could enjoy this together or whatever. Especially now that she's getting to an age where like, you know, she can enjoy it and it's kind of like a big new experience for her. But we're touring later this year. We'll be touring nothing's announced yet, but we will be touring in like October and stuff.
Yeah.
I've got other albums that I'm trying to get out this year as well.
So
this is like kind of one of three projects that I'm trying to get out this year.
Yeah.
And again, it's just finding the time to kind of like to get those other bits and pieces done. But yeah, we're busy this year. We've got lots of festivals throughout the summer and then we've got the tour happening later on in the year. You know, we'll be going to Europe and we'll go to America and then we're going to be running through the UK as well. But yeah, that's all yet to come. But first, it's just getting the album out finally and just having people hear it because it's been a long time coming, this one. You know, I've been working on it for quite a while and perfecting it. And there was a lot of back and forth trying to figure out things and last minute additions and subtractions to the track list and stuff. So yeah. I'm just excited to have it out there, you know, and see what people's reactions is to it.
I love it. I can't wait for all that's ahead. And I thank you for taking the time, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, man.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Bobby Villain. I hope you enjoyed that. I was nervous to bring up the Sleaford Mods thing because, again, they're my boys, and I genuinely think they're good people, good political people. I think that thing was a fuck up and it was handled poorly. Obviously, it's out of context, but I also respect people, you know, rightfully feeling the need to call out shit like that. So I was pleased to bring that up in a similar way to when I had the Sleafords on. I brought up Idols because they're also people I rate and think the world of, but I also understood the criticism that, you know, the mods have of them. So yeah, I'm really pleased that on the long form kind of format of this podcast and the tone that we set, I guess, we can bring up topics like that and discuss them in a non-tabloidy manner, if you know what I mean. I feel all of those subjects have been discussed with nuance and calmness rather than say something. Go on, say something, you know. Absolute joy of a conversation. Speaking of which, I'll be back next week with another joy of a conversation because that's what we do here. We've been, for over 9 years, we've had an episode a week. Yeah, it's a madness. Here we are. I'll see you next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.